As I said today, we look at Mark chapter 11, and we're considering Mark's reflection of Palm Sunday and the triumphal entry. Mark is, as I've commented before, the shortest gospel. Mark has very little time that he spends on a lot of topics. For instance, right, like the Gospel of Mark begins with John out in the wilderness doing the baptisms and with Jesus as an adult. He has no mention of a young Jesus or anything like that. And the pace of the story, at Mark 11, you have Jesus coming into Jerusalem. And Matthew's gospel, the triumphal entry, is not until a much, much later chapter, because Mark is just moving quickly to get to the point. And the gospel is only 16 chapters long. And so at 11, we get to the triumphal entry. And Mark really dwells on this, and he tells the story in a way that's pretty unique when you look at it next to Matthew or to Luke or John, because in this triumphal entry account, we get Jesus going into the temple, and then when he finally gets into the temple with all the pomp and circumstance and the cult and the hosannas, when he gets into the temple, he looks around and he goes, well, it's pretty late, let's go home. And then he turns around and leaves. And then on the way, the following day, they're walking back to the temple, and he sees a fig tree, and he walks up to it because he's hungry, and it's got a fig on it. And he says, oh, I want a fig. That sounds delicious right now. And he gets up to it, and there's no fig on it. And so he curses it, even though it's not the season for figs. He just walks up to this tree, and he curses it. And the disciples are observing this thing, but it looks pretty wanton. It looks pretty weird that Jesus does this. And then after he curses it, he goes into the temple, and he cleanses it out, and this is like classic angry Jesus chasing the people out with the because they're doing a money lending in the temple. And then they walk back by the fig tree the next day, and they see this fig that Jesus had cursed, and that it's dead now. And that's our story, right? And it's weird. It almost feels like it's kind of interestingly written. You don't really expect this random digression on the fig tree. Why are we suddenly talking about this fig tree again? And why did we even curse it in the first place? It doesn't seem to make sense at first pass. But as I have commented on before, Mark actually is up to some really cool literary stuff in his gospel. And he really does like to try and sandwich things in to try and help us understand why he's sharing specific stories and what's going on. One example of this is I talked about how Jesus heals a blind man when they start moving toward Jerusalem because he's still opening up the eyes of the disciples. And then he heals another blind man right before they get into Jerusalem because he's opening up the eyes of the disciples. And the whole travel narrative is trying to unpack that for them and what his death and resurrection will mean. They sandwich this one as well, that Mark has actually written it so that Jesus curses the fig tree, goes into the temple, and then you come out and see the fig tree has been cursed. And the lesson here is really all about the temple, or more specifically, what it means to be the faithful people of God. So what's going on in the temple? What's up with all of this? Taking a step back and looking at even the triumphal entry and the temple, we start to get a bigger picture of what the people of God were up to and what they wanted. Jesus coming in and the shouts of Hosanna, that is a particular request, even with the palm branches, and they're shouting out like the Father of David, that this is a desire that Jesus is going to come in as a conquering king. They would much rather him be on a war horse than on a colt. They want him to come in and they want him to kill the Romans and get him out of there. That's the desire for how Jesus is going to come in. And so they have a very nationalistic desire that Jesus is going to come in and do this. And this is, I'm not like making this up. If you look through, you see this desire for nationalism coming out again and again. Even we talk about like, why would they let Barabbas go? He's just a murderer. He's not a murderer. He's an insurrectionist, right? They're celebrating someone who is actively working against the Roman government. Or when Jesus, right before he's ascended, the disciples say, when are you going to make your kingdom right now? Like, get rid of those other nations. We want to see that right now. That's a desire that's really built into the people at this point in time. And so they're shouting for that and they're asking for that. And this is what they want. Like the disciples, they just don't understand what it means that the Messiah has come and the Messiah is going to be sacrificed and going to be raised up from the dead 3 days later. Then Jesus goes home. He comes back, curses the fig tree. We go into the temple and he chases out the moneylenders. There are not supposed to be moneylenders on the temple doing those things. And if you start digging into some of the background that's going on here, these moneylenders are just price gouging everything. That they are not there just to help out people. They are there to take advantage of those who are disadvantaged. They are robbing, you know, you have the story of the widow's mite where the widow goes up to donate that last coin that she has. And frequently we talk about this as the chance to say, like, we should give everything we have. When the real story there is the Pharisees should not have let her get to the point where she only had one coin, because you have to care for the widow and the orphan. That the moneylenders and the way the temple has been going, it's not doing what it's supposed to. It's not serving as a beacon of hope and salvation for Yahweh, who has made himself known, who has freed the people from Pharaoh, who continues to walk with them and care for them. Rather, the temple has become a place of oppression where the religious authorities are lording it over people, and they're taking advantage of the widow and the orphan and the poor, and they're actually disenfranchising people. So that when Jesus gets in and he sees the temple, a place that should celebrate the God of the Exodus, who claims a people and makes them whole, a God who gave us the 10 words so that we would live as a community unlike anywhere else in the world without the oppression, that he gets angry because it's not that. It's the opposite of that. It's everything that he's railing against. And so he chases these people out. And then we get the lesson of the withered fig tree, that's what it was all about. Jesus isn't just wantonly cursing this fig tree and saying, I don't like this fig tree. Let's get rid of it, right? That it's this great metaphorical lesson that the fig tree is sandwiched in and around this temple encounter so that we understand the temple. The temple looks like a place where God should be celebrated and worshiped. It looks, Jerusalem looks like it should be celebrating who Yahweh God is, who the God of the Exodus is. And yet when Jesus gets in there, he finds no fruit. He sees a leaf, but he doesn't find any fruit. Instead, he finds oppression and animosity and anxiety and all of the things that we're not supposed to do. And so he cleanses it out and he curses this temple. And then he goes back out and we see this cursed and withered fig tree. And that it's this warning that Jesus is giving to the Pharisees and the Sadducees and the people of God and the scribes and to us right now, that we are to be figs who bear fruit. The book of James talks about it this way, that if we are a people of faith, then we are a people who do good works. That is, faith begets good works. Faith works. It just can't help but do that. We're a people of faith. We love our neighbor. And so Jesus is giving us this incredible warning about the lesson of the fig tree. And it's easy to look at this and to start talking about those big picture examples of those people out there are doing this wrong. Like, it would be a clear example of this, right, is Christian nationalism. The insurrection that happened in January, that's a great example of a people who are talking about Jesus and showing the leaves, but aren't bearing fruit as they try and overturn violently our government system, right? It's easy to point at that and say, hey, that's a really great way of applying this. And it is, to be fair. But this is something that serves as a warning for us as well, that the people don't know they're doing the wrong things. And so this comes to us and it reminds us to always be evaluating and thinking through what it is to be the people of God. We are a people grounded in the grace of God and his resurrection and his love and his peace for us. We are who we are because of what Christ has done. and that he has washed us in the waters of baptism and filled us with his Spirit, and he grounds us in that identity of grace. And we must never forget that we are grounded in an identity of grace. Because when we start to forget that, we'll start acting out of our fear and out of our anxiety. We won't act out of love and mercy. We'll act out of the other things that we shouldn't be motivated by. And we will live in an oppressive way, and we will suddenly be a fig tree that has a leaf but no fruit. And that Christ is calling us, and Mark is calling us, to think about that and to reflect on that as we live our lives. That we would take this faith seriously and consider how we are, as a people, are bearing fruit, and that we would constantly strive to do that because we are motivated by that grace. And so this is a call that we have as individuals, certainly, but it's also a call that we have as a congregation, that we get to keep thinking about how we bear fruit and what that looks like in the world around us, how we're using the gifts that we've been given. And I don't think, by the way, that Jesus would walk into First Lutheran and start like flipping pews over or something like that. Don't misunderstand me. But this is encouragement that the things we're doing right now that we're doing well, and the ways that we are serving and caring for the community, these are wonderful things. And this text encourages us to keep doing that and to keep evaluating how what we're doing is working and what we can strive to do better, that we can keep bearing that fruit and keep showing the love of God to a world that desperately needs us. But it's also a text that reminds us never to get too cozy and too comfortable, and to stop being willing to ask questions. We have to be open to the many ways that God is at work in his creation, and specifically in our church and in our neighborhood. And that pushes us to strive for that. Amen.